Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner in PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Joe Cipriano, Program Executive Officer for Information Technology at the U.S. Department of Navy. Joining us in our conversation is another PwC partner, Bill Phillips. Well, Joe, let me ask you one more question as we're coming out about sort of the challenges at NMCI. You described that as a result of this, the Navy will now be buying a service, whereas it once actually did it itself and owned all the infrastructure. That seems like a huge management challenge to come around to that point of thinking and actually execute it. How was that done?
It actually was a process that was started a year or two ahead of NMCI, where the Navy looked at and identified what its core business was. And we also looked at where our people were. And we had an objective of putting more of our people assets because we were seeing increasing challenges in recruiting and retaining kinds of people, that the ones we had, we wanted to make sure we're focused on the areas that were our core business areas. So we identified those core business areas. We identified how we had distributed our knowledge workforce and our talents to support that. And then we start doing business cases on the non-core areas to see, this is to understand how much it was costing us to do them ourselves, and then how much it might cost us to have somebody else do them for us that could do them more efficiently. And we did that with NMCI. We did a business case. We did if we were to do this ourselves, this is how much it would cost. We had that done before we got the proposals back from industry. So we said, this is how much it's costing us to do it ourselves, and this is the result of that cost. And then we got bids back from industry that said, this is how much it would cost us to do that same thing if we had industry do it. And by comparing those two, it's a very compelling business case in this particular example that it's something you want to let somebody else do for you.
Did the numbers alone work? Or wasn't there the argument made, and I think you just made it, that of course somehow me touching it and controlling it beats any number differential? How do people get over that?
There's always that, and you have to keep enough in-house expertise, I think, in these things, so that you can be a smart buyer, and so we made some decisions about what. We looked at our workforce and made sure we retained enough expertise and enough work for them to do that we could continue to be a smart buyer and continue to reinforce the fact that, yes, this is a valid business case. Yes, we are getting this service, meeting our requirements, and we're doing it in a cost-effective way. So it's not something you can stop, I think. It's something you have to look at and continue to look at over time.
Joe, you've described a number of specific success measures over the course of your sort of responses to our questions here in the last few minutes. But when you sit in a room with the Secretary of the Navy or the CNO or the four stars or the senior leadership of the Navy, what things are they asking you and wondering about to measure the success of NMCI?
Most of the measures from their viewpoint is customer satisfaction. Are the customers or the users happy with the service that they're getting? That's really the key. If you did everything right, they are, and if you haven't, then there's things you need to do. So customer satisfaction is a big one and something that we try to stay right on top of. We have online surveys that we do, even starting now during the transition, to do these surveys, and so we can find issues that are involved during that period of time. But when we're done, and I'm sure this will change, the questions will change as now we're getting started and we're identifying budgets and so forth and going through transition phases. I think the question when we're done is going to be, have we in fact sped up our decision-making process? Because if when all is said and done, if we aren't making faster, better decisions as a result of this investment, then we didn't do it right. That's the real reason for doing it. Because I think faster, better decisions is the key to success in business, and it's the key to success in warfare. So to the extent that you can do that, and take advantage of technology to allow you to do that, I think you will be successful in both of those fronts. So we've tried to identify measures. It's hard to measure the reaction time of an organization directly, but we've identified about 200 metrics that we think in a group allow us to get an indication of the reaction time of the organization as a system, that if these metrics are being met, then we are have optimized our reaction time as a organization. Lots of element. NMCI alone doesn't do that. You have to work the application side. We have other initiatives such as Task Force W, which is a web-enabled initiative where we're web-enabling applications. We have organizational issues where we're changing how we look at requirements to buying capability instead of buying stuff, and that is impacting how we're organized, how we budget, how we prioritize things. And so there's lots of things that come along with this. But I think if you keep in focus, bottom line, how do you speed up the reaction time of the organization, and is this speeding up the reaction time of the organization? That's really the bottom line measure.
You use the phrase faster, better decisions. That's clearly consistent with what Secretary Rumsfeld has said that he expects the Department of Defense to do. Are there applications of NMCI and what you're trying to accomplish there elsewhere in DOD, in the Army, the Air Force, or for that matter, across the federal government?
I think there are. The other DOD agencies and other government agencies as well have asked us to what we're doing, and we've briefed them. In fact, foreign governments even have. And so this is, NMCI has raised an enormous amount of interest across the government. Here and abroad, and we have talked to them about what we did and how we did it. We've freely given them copies of our service level agreements and contracting strategies and whatnot, so that they can borrow from those, improve upon them, which is what we did. We went out and looked at everybody else had done this and tried to come up with a little better way than everybody else had. And I'm sure others that choose to go this path will find a better way to do it than we did. You know, here's what worked well and here's what didn't. But I think there is a large part of this that is directly applicable to other government agencies and even commercial agencies, because we tried to follow best practice, and that, you know, and we went out and discovered what that was and followed best practice as to the best we could understand it at the time. Tried to make it better in some places. So best practice is best practice, and to the extent that we were successful at identifying it, I think it is directly applicable.
Do you give them any other lessons learned from your experience?
We had a couple of things that that we would recommend people do in preparation for this, and one in particular is that most big companies, IBMs and so forth, and Microsofts have 80 or 100 applications that they run their business with that are critical to their business. In the Department of the Navy, we have like 100,000 of those that were identified as critical. I can't do my business without them. So we had a very, very big, large number of those. And to make all of those run in this new environment and didn't make a lot of sense. So we wanted to rationalize those applications. And that rationalization process is being done at the Echelon 2 level and then again at the enterprise level. So we have kind of two levels of rationalization. That process has taken, first of all, we were somewhat surprised at the number of them. There were more of them than management was aware of that had snuck in over the years. And it has taken us a little longer to get that rationalization process done. So I would start with that process in advance of NMCI. I would have started a year ahead of time working that a little harder. The problem is you can't get anybody to work on it unless you have a forcing function. NMCI is providing the forcing function, and so we're working on it. But if you could figure out a way to get people to work on that problem in advance of the forcing function, maybe the threat of the forcing function would be very good.
If one thought about the place such an innovative idea and project would have come from, they might not have immediately thought about the Navy, rich in tradition, not prone to change, and that's probably been an attribute of its success. What sparked this innovation, or what in the Navy culture makes innovation possible that people really don't understand?
I think there's a lot of innovation, I believe, in the Navy and in the other services as well, because I believe innovation is fostered by a results-oriented organization or management approach. When you are the commanding officer of a ship at sea and you have command of all these resources and you are being held accountable for success of a mission, innovation is important and allowed. You have a lot of authority to make decisions on how to do things, and you're being held accountable for result. And in the culture of the Navy and in the Marine Corps, accountability is very strong. And so innovation, you know, what does it take to be successful, which is where innovation comes from, is right below the surface, if not at the surface. And the balance of that with complying with policies and procedures and all those other things that we're required to do in government sometimes means that the innovation doesn't break through the surface. In this particular case, I was very fortunate that the ASN, the Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, and Acquisition, at the time this was created, said, I'm going to give you extra credit for every rule you break. You know, I want this contract done as fast as humanly possible. You have my full authority to waive any procedures or processes, and if it's a statute, come tell me about it, and I'll work on that too. So I had that kind of support from my boss as we started this thing, and we had a sign that was hung in front of the contracting team's office that said, "This team has been bludgeoned into believing they can do anything consistent with common sense. Please do not convince them otherwise." And that was signed Lee Buchanan. And that was actually hanging out in front of the door just to remind people that, you know, it's okay in this case to think out of the box, to look at things that you may have been told or led to believe you couldn't do, and to challenge those. And we found there wasn't a single statute that had to be changed or violated, and in fact, we have an enormous amount of freedom if we use it to do things very, very quickly and efficiently.
Great. It's a good stopping point. Rejoin us after the break, and we'll talk about the future with Joe Cipriano, find out how the possible retirement wave might affect many of the things he's been talking about with us. This is the Business of Government Hour.